Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So maybe you remember the blackout of 2003 as a one-day inconvenience. Journalist Amanda Little will never forget it as an event that changed her life. It inspired her to plan a year-long cross-country journey to write about the role of energy in our everyday lives. That has now resulted in a book called Power Trip, From Oil Wells to Solar Cells, Our Ride to a Renewable Future. One of her subjects, the world's greenest skyscraper, right here in New York. Amanda Little, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks.
And the world's greenest skyscraper, or America's greenest skyscraper, is?
The Bank of America headquarters on 1 Bryant Park.
6th Avenue and 42nd Street.
That's right.
It has the highest sustainability rating, I see, that a building can get, known as the Platinum LEED rating. What does that mean?
Well, the LEED standard is sort of the gold standard of building performance.
No, the gold is the second highest rating.
That's true.
It's the platinum
This
standard.
Is the platinum standard, exactly. And this was, you know, in lay terms, this is the greenest skyscraper in America. I think there might be some slightly greener buildings in Dubai or elsewhere in the world, but this is our best building in the country, and it's I think about 50 stories high, 900 feet high, and it's a gorgeous building that looks like a sort of large hunk of quartz, kind of rising out of the sooty streets of Manhattan. And
it is a very striking building for anybody walking uptown on 6th Avenue, heading toward 42nd Street. You see that building, and it's like, wow.
Yeah.
But I had no idea that it was this environmentally friendly. And you write about energy the building creates and energy that the building saves. How does a building create energy?
Well, in this case, there's actually a 4.6 megawatt power plant that's installed inside the building.
A power plant?
Yes.
Which
runs on natural gas. And, you know, there are plenty of people who would immediately say, well, it's not solar or wind, which is true. You know, it could be cleaner. There are cleaner ways of producing power. But in this case, it's 70% of the building's energy demands. It produces energy three times more efficiently than the grid. So, you know, it's not entirely carbon-free, but it's a lot cleaner. And it's also moving toward a distributed energy generation system. So when the building is producing its own power and it's not reliant on the grid, and it can also give back to the grid, you know, when at night or when the inhabitants are out, it's performing a function that it wasn't before. It's instead of being a consumer, it's a producer.
Anybody else work in what you would consider a green skyscraper? Let's limit it to green skyscrapers just for the next few minutes. If you work in that Bank of America tower, we'd love to hear from you, or anywhere else that you consider a green or heading toward green skyscraper. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, and we'll continue our Bank of America tour in a minute here. But can I digress on natural gas for a second? Because, you know, this is a big debate in New York right now. They're going to do this new kind of drilling that apparently is being very productive in many places for natural gas through shale up around the New York City reservoirs. And people are up in arms because they're afraid this is going to pollute the water. People who are for it, besides the companies that get to make the money from the drilling, say this is a relatively sustainable, not oil, not coal kind of energy production that has vast potential. So how do you view natural gas in the pecking order of sustainability?
I think it's a transition technology. I think it's, you know, it's a lot cleaner, certainly, than coal and oil. I don't think it's going to be a major source of power for our buildings and cars, you know, in 100 years. But I think in the time being, it's a crucial part of a transition towards cleaner energy systems. Natural gas is a really important feedstock for plastics, for medicines, for petrochemicals. So I think there are applications for natural gas that are far more valuable than burning it in a power plant. But let me say this, the relevance of natural gas, of this natural gas power plant in the Bank of America building is more that it's shifting the structure of our energy production and consumption. The building itself is producing its own power. That could be from solar or wind or natural gas or biofuels. But in this case, I think we're shifting from a distributed energy system, from a centralized energy system to a distributed one, where the buildings become more and more self-sufficient, and that's what's important. I would like to mention that this has not been done since about 1883, when Thomas Edison was installing the first power plants, and he actually did a personal power plant for J.P. Morgan. One of his sort of angel investors, and he put this in Morgan's house, and the foul fumes and the sounds were so appalling that all the neighbors complained and his wife complained, and they took it out. But
I have an environmentalist friend who says we should turn the old environmentalist phrase "not in my backyard" on its head and say "in my backyard," because then everybody has to take responsibility for their stuff. In fact, did you know that at the Burning Man Festival in Nevada, we had a video pic on our site last week of one of the founders of the Burning Man Festival, and one of their basic tenets is they have no waste baskets.
Wow.
Everybody has to pack out what they pack in.
Yeah.
And, so
makes a lot of sense.
Right? So let's go on to another element of the tower. You write about room-by-room measurements of carbon dioxide that people are emitting. I've never heard of that before. Room-by-room measurements of carbon dioxide?
Yeah. Well, what's wild is that, we, of course, exhale carbon dioxide. So the building can measure, the presence of humans inside its walls.
So is it just that some of us are heavier breathers than our office mates?
No, let's say that, we had 50 people in this room.
Big meeting.
And, and everybody starts getting drowsy, which we do, because carbon dioxide, it's like breathing into the paper bag. It makes you that's what you do when you're high anxiety. It calms you down.
And so what does the building do?
The building just filters the air. So it will turn on the air filters and clear out the air and put more oxygen in that room if there's a lot of people in that room. But why filter clean air into a room that's empty of people? So it's a building getting smarter, and it's saying, there are inhabitants here. This room needs oxygen. That I need to turn on the fans and, pump air into this room. But if nobody's there, why waste the energy? So it's a much smarter system. It's an energy-saving system, and it's also a productivity characteristic too, because we're all more productive when we have more oxygen, and when we're stuck in a room with high CO2, we get drowsy and we don't do much.
Amanda Little, author of Power Trip, From Oil Wells to Solar Cells, Our Ride to a Renewable Future, and Angie in Manhattan has another LEEDS Platinum sustainable building in Manhattan, right?
Actually, I think it's probably gold. I saw it in the 50s on Madison Avenue. It was under construction. So I don't know if you are aware of that building. And I found it had on the side, it said that it was, they were using, I think, carbon filament on the top seven floors, because as those who are aware of energy efficiency, part of the LEED thing is to have materials are less energy intensive, and steel and cement tend to be extremely energy intensive in their production. So they're just trying to take some of these materials that are strong and less energy intensive and use them on the top floors, because then they're less load bearing.
Angie, thank you.
That's a great point, Angie. Actually, one statistic that blew my mind was that 1 ton of cement is equivalent to 1 ton of carbon dioxide. And there are plenty of ways, just because it's so energy intensive, to produce that material. So there are plenty of ways of saving energy in building construction that don't have to do with actually, reducing your energy bills, that have to do with the way you build the building. So that's something that this building, that the Bank of America headquarters took into account as well. Finding ways to use recycled material, to get materials that are closer to the point of use, the point of construction, all that saves energy.
John in the Bronx, a subcontractor at a green skyscraper going up, I guess. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Where are you working?
I'm running a save.
Okay, you don't want to say. That's okay. But you want to make a point about this.
Yes, the point is that it's the expense of building, of constructing that building, I think is a barrier to a lot of other people doing it. It's incredibly, it was incredibly expensive to set it up. And it's just to operate. I walked every part of that building, and it's incredibly expensive.
Can you give me one? Can you give me one example?
You know, like in the basement, they have all these huge generators and batteries, and it looks just like rows and rows and rows of batteries of generators and things like that.
Are you talking about the ice batteries?
Yeah. Yeah, in all these rooms, and I don't know how much they cost, but to me, it looks like it's very expensive and on a long-term basis. And then the worst part of it is that Merrill Lynch people just moved in there, and why should they be getting the rewards of all this stuff?
Thank you, John. A reality check from John in the Bronx, yes?
Yeah, I think it's true that they're, you're going to have higher costs on the front end of building green buildings, but the energy savings are so significant that you recoup those costs in sometimes, you know, a very short amount of time. For instance, the Bank of America building energy savings amount to about $4 million a year just on energy bills alone. That doesn't take into account, you know, what you've saved in actually constructing the building. And the, payback period on that premium cost could be 10 years, 20 years. But once you pay back that down payment, then you're making money on the building. So you've got to get beyond the near-term cost and think in, you know, in long-term. And I think it's profoundly symbolic that it's a bank that's actually building this green building, because it shows that, it makes good economic sense.
And Bank of America no less, considering what they've been in the news for recently.
Yeah.
But let me put this in even larger context of your book, because you write that the idea of a green skyscraper, like many of the emerging renewable technologies that you write about, will take some time to reach the mass market, but will shape the cities of tomorrow. But with John's call in mind, I mean, people have been predicting a solar energy electric car future since the energy shocks of the 1970s.
Sure.
And they still have only a sliver of the market because they're not competitive in terms of price. So what makes you confident that the next 30 years will be any different?
I think it was actually more inspiring to me to see some of the innovations that are happening in low-income building. The Bank of America had all the kind of whiz-bang, sexy, you know, clean tech, you know, smart building stuff going on. But I also went to a community in outside of Knoxville, Tennessee, of Habitat for Humanity Zero Energy Buildings, near zero energy buildings. They're building for $150,000. These are, 70% more efficient than standard homes.
One of the most interesting parts of your book to me was the stories about post-Katrina New Orleans as an unlikely model for affordable, sustainable housing.
Exactly. Very similar community of homes that, it's Make It Right Foundation, started by Brad Pitt, and they've brought in all kinds of very high-end architects, including Frank Gehry and others, with the constraint saying, okay, what can you do to make a super efficient, high-performance home for $150,000? And they're doing it, and they're innovating the building practices. They're innovating, trying to get the cheapest kind of, let's say, energy efficient window, but they're putting they're competing to make it cheaper, and easier and more affordable to live this way.
Before I forget, Amanda Little will be at the New York Public Library branch on Mulberry Street in Lower Manhattan Wednesday at 6:30.
Yes.
You going to read and sign and talk?
Yes, I will.
You don't know the rating of that building, do you?
No, I don't.
And before you go, here's a comment from our website. Somebody writes in, Con Ed consistently refuses to buy surplus power from private generators. Unlike power companies in California, Con Ed will not let you run the meter backwards to supply power to the grid. Con Ed claims that they will not be able to control the quality of the electricity that is produced by third parties. This is a well-known stumbling block to green power proponents. Do you know that to be true? Because I thought I've heard Con Ed officials talk about, in fact, buying power back.
I can't confirm that one way or the other, but I can say that I met with Con Ed's engineers and its president, Lou Reyna. I actually was invited to crawl down inside the New York City electricity grid and witness this incredibly gruesome snarl of electrical cables in underneath a manhole. And I learned a lot. You know, I mean, this is a very reliable grid on you know, many levels in New York City. We have 80,000 miles of cable. It's more copper underneath the streets of New York than in any copper mine in the world.
And that has to be the last word. More power, more copper underneath the streets of New York than in any copper mine in the world. Amanda Little, her book is Power Trip, From Oil Wells to Solar Cells, Our Ride to a Renewable Future. And at the Mulberry Street Public Library Branch, Wednesday at 6:30. Thank you.
Thank you.